Justice and Drew is underway for your Wednesday morning. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. I hope you have something special planned, something romantic.
All the special.
Hoping to get a lot of candy this year.
All the romantic.
Yeah. Yeah. Brianne, any big Valentine's Day romantic plans on your plate today?
Pass.
No special. Wow. Special someone.
You don't seem like the doe-eyed, hopeless romantic type.
I don't.
Where'd you get that idea?
Yeah, I was just going to say, where'd you get that impression?
Well, I didn't even think about that. I'm going to have an empty house today. I could theme my
theme your movie watching.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, that opens up a lot of options.
Don't open that door. You're just going to be sad at the end of the day.
It does open up a lot of options. Though. I'm going to have to think long and hard about that. I'm just going to think about what I will watch today in honor of. Oh, you know what? Actually, I have the namesake movie on DVD, so maybe I'll just watch that.
Valentine's Day?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You have that?
Yeah, actually, it's one I didn't, and honestly, because you know I would confess to these things, I did not purchase it. This was a purchase by my wife, who will not be home today, but maybe I'll watch Valentine's Day. Taylor Swift is in that.
That's accurate.
She's actually kind of funny in that. Yeah. It's not a bad movie.
It's a delightfully bad
you know, movie.
Not Gary Marshall's finest.
Yeah. I like you more and more every day, Brianne.
Brianne, do you have a romantic go-to movie? Something that makes your heart go a flutter?
No. I saw I, Tonya. I really enjoyed that.
That is so not romantic.
I don't know what that,
that is.
You know.
That, I saw it as well. That is not romantic at all, but
really
it was good.
I enjoyed it, so, you know.
Yeah. Attack of the Clones could go that route. It's kind of a romance, you know.
Oh, God.
He hates sand, but not there because it's soft and smooth. If you go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com on the Justice and Drew page, you can see a photo of this. Just a quick story out of Metro UK. We're expecting from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, Rob Doerr is going to be joining us to talk about this editorial. Tell the Senate to reject the Dangerous Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. The story, though, you can see a photo of this. An unbelievable photograph shows a woman on all fours on a conveyor belt as she follows her bag as it passes through the security scanner. So apparently the woman didn't want to be separated from her bag. Okay. So it's unclear what she was carrying in her handbag, right? But she had put her suitcases through the machine before walking through the security checkpoint holding a smaller bag, right? And then she climbed onto the X-ray machine because she didn't want to leave her bag behind. Officers were stunned when she started to climb on herself, and they were left speechless. They did not stop her as she collected her bag and rushed to get her to her train. So there's a photo of her going through the machine being X-rayed. I can't imagine that's healthy to have that.
No.
I can't imagine. I mean,
I don't know.
I know you get X-rayed, but that's really powerful for the airport conveyor belt.
I think it's probably fine. It's you know, prolonged exposure
might
cause some problems, but just a quick trip, just an in and out, probably not a big deal.
None of us are doctors, by the way.
There's a part of me.
You don't know that.
There's a part of me that believes that it's really, really dangerous, and it's the reason why they let her go, because they know that the problems she's going to be faced with now are just like, she's going to have to deal with it now.
That just would seem like, if I'm a security guy, that's a huge red flag. Like, I want to know what's in that bag.
Well, they scanned the bag.
Yeah, but I want to know what's in the bag. I'm grabbing that bag for extra screening. If you can't take your hands off of it, there's something really, really special in there.
Yeah, no,
that's a red flag to me.
I'm convinced that when you go through, like when you go through the Minneapolis airport, you know, when you got to stand there and you got to put your feet on the little foot markers and put your hands up like that, right? And the little go. I'm convinced that does nothing.
No, it does.
I think it's all for show.
No, I've seen the pictures. They see everything.
With that. I thought that's somewhere where they were testing for hazardous materials.
I don't know. From the pictures that I've seen.
Yeah.
They see a lot.
See, I was convinced that it was just there. It's just like, just to kind of freak everybody out.
It gets real personal.
Does it really? Yeah, well, I got no problem.
Tell if you have a hernia.
I got no problems with that. I got no shame. I'm good. All right, Washington Examiner. A little more serious note. On January 20th, 2017, moments before Trump took the oath of office to become president, you had Rice emailing herself about a briefing that took place. Yeah, that
Susan Rice.
About a briefing that took place that month with the intelligence community about Russian hacking during the 2016 presidential election. Then President Barack Obama had a meeting on January 5th, 2017, with then FBI Director James Comey and then Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates. Rice and then Vice President Joe Biden were also present at the Oval Office meeting. At the end of her email describing the meeting, Rice wrote that from a national security perspective, Obama said he wants to be sure that we engage with the incoming team. We are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. Now, the email, according to Senators Chuck Grassley and Lindsey Graham, say that it's unusual and they want answers on a variety of questions. Okay, so they're calling on the former National Security Advisor Susan Rice to explain in the email that she wrote to herself on the day of Trump's inauguration that insisted Obama wanted to make sure the probe into Russia's election meddling was done by the book. Grassley asked and Graham asked her to tell them when she first became aware of the FBI's investigation into allegations of collusion between the Trump campaign. The FBI reportedly began investigating the links between Trump and Russia sometime in July of 2016. They also asked whether Comey and Yates discussed the dossier at the Oval Office meeting and with Obama, and how Comey described the FBI's relationship with the dossier's author, Christopher Steele. Did President Obama have any other meetings with Mr. Comey, Ms. Yates, or other government officials about the FBI's investigation of allegations of collusion between Trump associates and Russia? The letter asked. It asked Rice to reply by February 22nd. It feels like there's a lot being made over this sort of by the book quote that was in this that Susan Rice did. I do agree that it does raise some red flags as to why they had to go and label it by the book. There's a couple other things that came out with this too, though. And one of them was apparently Obama was talking to the FBI director, James Comey, after he was no longer president. And like he was advising Comey to go and provide him with information after he had already left office, which also came to light in this whole situation. I don't personally believe, one, that they're ever going to be held accountable for what may have happened. But it does seem pretty clear to me that Obama, Rice, and Comey all felt that they were justified to skirt the rules of law when it comes to what they were doing. And to me, it lends to a lack of, to put it lightly, credibility on their part. And also their role to play in this whole Russia collusion narrative.
This email, this long email, and I encourage people to go and read the whole memo that was released on it by Grassley and Graham. It's really unusual. It's really strange. It feels a lot like, well, it is. I mean, it doesn't feel like it. It is. It was an absolute CYA email. It was, oh, I need to document. I need to put all this stuff in writing in case I'm asked about it later. So, in the fact that it took place so long after the meeting took place calls all the credibility into question.
Right.
And the fact that it took place right before inauguration, I'm more and more convinced that, you know, they knew that this entire Russia narrative was built on a complete straw man. And that they were running with it purely for political purposes because they thought it would be enough to discredit Trump, discredit the Trump campaign, and Hillary would win the election, so none of it would matter anyway. Now that Trump won, and as realization started to set in that this was going to become a thing and that Trump was going to push back on it and that it was going to get exposed, they all started scrambling and covering their own butts, and that's exactly what this email is.
And what's so maddening about it is that when you take everything that we know in total of the dossier, the FISA warrant, the information we see here, you do the side-by-side comparisons between the evidence or lack thereof of Trump Russia collusion and the evidence of how that narrative was created in the first place. It is incredibly lopsided. All the weight is falling on the creation via this dossier that led to the narrative that gets pushed like it's the other way around in the mainstream media. And that's what I find is so incredibly frustrating about all of this, is that the real story here isn't Trump colluding with Russia. The real story is how the narrative was created in the first place and peddled.
Yep. Rick from Minneapolis. Good morning, Rick. Go ahead.
I'd like to add a little element to this that sounds a little conspiratorial to me, but why was Sally Yates there instead of the actual attorney general? Because Sally Yates was only going to fill in after the attorney general got there. She was going to be the one pulling the strings after the administration switched over.
Yeah, add it to the list.
I know. It just seems, why wasn't the actual attorney general there?
Of course.
I mean, she's the one in charge.
I know. Add it to the list of questions that the mainstream media won't bother going and looking into and finding out an answer for.
Yeah, and I'm usually like the last one to get on board with anything that's conspiratorial, but it seems pretty clear that they conspired to create this narrative again because they were certain it wouldn't matter in the end of the day because everybody knew Hillary Clinton was going to win.
Yeah.
You know, this was just a little bit of extra dirt to kind of muddy up the waters around the Trump campaign, and then when Hillary won, everybody would forget about it because they would have completely forgotten.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Insurance is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was like an insurance policy.
It was insurance.
Strzok and Page used that exact phrase.
Something like that.
Rob Dorr.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning. Glad you could make it in.
Thank you.
We every time we went to go dive into the Star Tribune editorial written by Mike Freeman, the head of a county attorney, and John Joy, Ramsey County attorney.
Just made my brain
burn. Well, it's funny because, you do notes, and if you look at this, like everything is highlighted because there's just that much stupidity in it. So like yesterday we went to cover it. Every time we went to go do it, looked at the clock of like there's not enough time. to shred this thing.
I think you highlighted the entire article.
I did highlight the entire article. I told Drew, we started doing it. I'm like, there's nothing to cut out for time because it's all so stupid. But you had called in and wanted to get in on the action, and we figured let's get the expert to refute some of this. So
this piece was written by Mike Freeman and John Choi.
All right, I'll stop you there. There's the first problem. Mike Freeman and John Choi, they're the attorneys for Hennepin County and Ramsey County.
Right.
John Choi, prior to being the attorney, was a paid lobbyist for Citizens for a Safer Minnesota, which is now Protect Minnesota, which is the anti-gun lobbying organization in Minnesota. Mike Freeman has never met a gun control measure he didn't like. He spent over $300,000 in a gun buyback, and it had zero impact on crime, but they felt so passionate about it that they actually melted the guns down, and now it's into a statue that's in the Hennepin County Government Center Plaza there.
Which is probably more dangerous if it were to fall on somebody than the guns themselves in the hands of, well-trained gun owners.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because they were actually sued to mandate that they run the serial numbers to see if those guns actually were stolen from a legitimate owner who they belonged to. So.
Well, let's ask you this up front, Rob, before we dive into this monstrosity. Within their roles, within Mike Freeman and John Choi's roles, I just your thoughts on them penning an editorial like this. I mean, we know their background, we know their views on this, but how appropriate or inappropriate is it, in your opinion, for them to have penned this particular editorial about this Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act?
Whenever I see county attorneys pushing for gun control measures, I immediately think it's extremely hypocritical. The reason is the vast majority of gun deaths are first suicides. So those, they like to lump those numbers together in order to try to make gun deaths seem more epidemic than they are. But in Minnesota, 78% of our gun deaths are suicides. So that's not something that's going to be affected by criminal public policy. That's an entire different, mental health and stability policies. But within the sphere of criminals killing people, the single most under-prosecuted charge in Minnesota is felon in possession of a gun. It gets pled away over and over again by city and county attorneys. And Mike Freeman especially, and John Choi, the vast majority of Minnesota's homicides happen within their jurisdictions. Yet the single most under-prosecuted charge is felon in possession of a gun. And those are the people who are the epidemic. Those are the ones who are getting back out on the street, getting a gun again, and killing somebody.
Rob Dorr with the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus joins us in studio. We're going to talk more about this editorial, the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, and get his thoughts. Want to get yours as well. 651-989-5855 or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter.
News Talk AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Valentine's Day edition of Justice and Drew. Rob Dorr joining us, resident gun expert. Been big Valentine's Day plans, Rob?
I'm not a Valentine's Day guy.
A heart-shaped gun?
Heart-shaped. My wife actually got me a heart-shaped box with jerky.
I like that idea.
It was awesome idea.
That's sexy.
Yeah, you know, that got me going. No, it's a bunch of like individually half-ounce wrapped things of jerky with different flavors. There's like venison and buffalo and
seriously, I'm down with that.
Happy Valentine's Day.
All right.
I was going to bring some in to share, but I didn't want to.
It's your Valentine's Day
present. Yeah. No, it's good.
We're talking about this ridiculous editorial that showed up in the Star Tribune, written by Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman, Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. Tell the Senate to reject the dangerous Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. Real quick, for those that might not be aware, let's just do a quick headline version of what is the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act that they are so against.
So the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act is an act that's moving through Congress. It's been tried before, but this year, obviously, with the Republicans in control of all three branches, is its most successful opportunity. What the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act does is allow a permit holder or a concealed carry holder in any state to carry in any other state according to that state's laws.
Right.
So it's just like your driver's license, your marriage certificate. Instead of needing to go to each individual state, it's full faith and credit, which is a part of the Constitution, in that your permit is good in every other state according to their laws. Now, if there's a state like California or Hawaii who doesn't have any provisions, in practice to allow their citizens to carry, or if they pass a law saying there's no carry in the state, you can't carry there.
Right. You would still have to respect the individual laws of the state.
Yes, exactly. Right. But you'd be able to carry under the operation of that state's laws.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the argument that they try to lay out is that other states and the ability to get a concealed carry may be lax, maybe more lax than another particular state. So counter argue that one.
So yeah, that's what's interesting. They do point that out in the article. They point out that 29 states have no training requirements or live fire requirements like we have in Minnesota, and that also 12 additional states have no requirements whatsoever. If you don't even have to get a permit, if you are a law-abiding citizen, if you're legally allowed to own that firearm, you're legally allowed to carry it without needing to go ask the government permission. So they point that out, but what they don't point out is that the sky isn't falling in those states. So they're saying that it's going to be a danger here, but it's not even a danger in their own state. So, in fact, you look at some of them, three of the four lowest violent crime rate states in the country, Wyoming, Idaho, New Hampshire, all have constitutional carry, and there's no issue there.
Right.
So they're using that to scare people to say, oh my God, less trained people are going to be carrying here, but it's not even a problem in their own home state.
651-989-5855. Let's talk with Wayne from North Branch. Good morning, Wayne. Welcome to Justice and Drew. You're also on with Rob Dorr. What are your comments?
Good morning, everyone. First of all, you guys are missing the boat, man. It's Valentine's Day. You need a heart-shaped box full of ammo for your spouse. You know, I did that last night. You know, nothing says love like buying ammo for your spouse. You know? Okay. Hey, Rob, first of all, I was at the church security conference a couple weeks ago. Saw you there. Good job, by the way. But my comment is this. This lawyer wants to make some kind of statement and all, but doesn't Minnesota have some kind of preemption law where even a county or a city couldn't make a rule more stringent than the state has? I know in another state that I lived in, they had that. It was great.
Yeah, Minnesota does have preemption. So the only rules that a local municipality, like a county or a township or a city, can make are regarding the discharge of firearms. So they can't regulate whether or not you're allowed to carry or own or whatever, but they can regulate whether or not you can shoot that gun within that district.
At the beginning part of this editorial, they talk about the Super Bowl And then they say, one of the biggest events of the year went off without any major clashes, in part because of our Minnesota standards on concealed carry. Our common sense Minnesota gun laws allowed our officers to do their jobs and allowed the football fans to partake in festivities without fearing for their safety.
Rob, what role, in your opinion, did Minnesota's standards on concealed carry play in the fact that there were no major incidents at the Super Bowl?
The same as the fact that Justin Timberlake was playing or the weather was cold.
I mean, seatbelt laws.
Correlation doesn't equal causation. But what is interesting about that quote is that both John Choi and Mike Freeman have fought viciously against Minnesota's permit to carry laws. If they could repeal them, they would fully support repealing the carry law. So I'm kind of glad that we have this quote in the can now for them praising the carry laws.
These standards that you fought so hard against.
are good. And every time we see any expansion of gun rights, there's a certain crowd of people who are going to claim that the sky is falling. When we were fighting for a permit to carry, they were saying there's going to be shootouts in the street over parking spaces and blood would be running down Hennepin Avenue. It didn't happen. When we were fighting to legalize suppressors, our organization was testifying and Protect Minnesota, that organization testified that the only reason somebody would own a suppressor is to commit murder and get away with it. So they always have this grandiose rhetoric. It's interesting to see them kind of praising our law that they fought so hard against. But the fact remains that there's no correlation between the safety at the Super Bowl and our carry laws.
It's true, isn't it, that vehicular deaths are more people die from vehicular deaths than do from like violent gun crime.
Absolutely,
right? Yeah. I mean, the vehicular deaths far outnumber the number of the violent gun crime deaths. Yet we honor driver's licenses from every other state.
Right.
How can we be so irresponsible to let these other people from other states whose standards for getting a license may be more lax than Minnesota's to bring their big death vehicles into our state?
You can't even get a license in Minnesota right now.
Yeah, maybe that's why Minlars is such a mess. They're doing it intentionally.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe they see your point.
No. You see the standard there. It's kind of ridiculous. When you say that if you have a permit to carry in state X, then state Y should honor it. It's full faith and credit. It's very common sense.
Right. And the important thing is, I know some people are concerned that this is like a federal takeover of permit to carry, and that's not the case. There's no standards. There's no permits. There's nothing that is being managed from the federal side. It is simply that full faith and credit, like your license, your marriage certificate, you have some professional licenses, that you can carry within the laws of that state. So if a state wanted to pass a law, which I'm sure if this passes, California, New Jersey, you know, New York, all those would just say, in order to carry in the state, you have to be a resident of New York. And there's nothing the federal government could do about that.
Later on in the article, well, let's go here first. But yeah. To your other previous point, they do sort of double down on what you were saying. Minnesota ensures that people are trained and screened before they're able to carry a hidden loaded handgun. A Minnesota citizen must get a permit, requires safety training and live fire experience, and we prohibit stalkers, abusive boyfriends, and people with convictions for violent behavior from carrying concealed weapons. These standards help keep Minnesota safe every day. And during Super Bowl weekend, they helped keep the 125,000 visitors safe, too. So that kind of adds reinforcement to what you were saying earlier over their comments.
Yeah, correlation doesn't equal causation. They're picking, you know, which intellectual honesty is never a strong point among anti-gun arguments because it never pans out. But they're picking and choosing correlating data that fits their agenda.
Later on in the editorial, they go and they say, currently, when a police officer checks to see if you have a Minnesota concealed carry permit, they can be confident that you are not subject to a restraining order or for abusing your girlfriend, for example. Under the concealed carry reciprocity, a person could be carrying a hidden loaded handgun, and if stopped by a law enforcement officer, they would only need to flash a driver's license from one of those 12 permitless states, no questions asked. With concealed carry reciprocity, it would be difficult or impossible for Twin Cities officers to verify whether a person from another state is legally carrying a concealed gun in public, and in cases where they are, to know if they have a dangerous history and they pose a threat.
It is atrocious that we might presume somebody's innocent until proven guilty. it's
mic drop.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what's difficult about this is why should somebody have to prove that they're capable of exercising their constitutional right? We don't go and make sure that people are practicing approved religions before they go to church. Right. We're not screening for terrorists outside of mosques. The left would go crazy about that. We're not going to assume that every person who is going to a mosque is a terrorist, just like we shouldn't assume every person holding a gun is some criminal or nefarious.
Especially when the data shows that the people that have gone through the processes to get the proper permits are some of the safest people in society. These are not people who are looking for opportunities to break laws. These are not people who are looking to cut corners when it comes to laws. They are looking to, they want to protect themselves. They want to protect the people around them. They want to feel safe and secure and have a firearm, but they want to make sure that they're following all the laws and regulations that are appropriate.
Yeah. And that's why they go through the process. I mean, that's why they buy the equipment. Yeah, I would be willing to bet if you went and grabbed the average person who's carrying on the street under a Minnesota permit to carry, that they've been to the range more often than any cop that you'll find on the street. It's a hobby. It's something they practice. It's something they train for.
They're probably more aware of the law.
Well, and I don't knock cops for that, because permit holders are so dang law abiding that cops don't have to interact with them that much. I whenever I'm testifying at the Capitol or something, there's times when a state patrol officer or something will misquote the law, and I'll correct them, and they'll kind of come up to me after and like, yeah, you got me there,
That's a
beat. But I say I am an expert in about 9 pages of Minnesota statutes. There are a bunch of statutes that you will run circles around me on, no questions asked. Sure. It's just within my position, I only have to be an expert on 9 pages.
The fear mongering, because that's what that previous comment were, but it continues, and you get right to the end. As county attorneys, it's our job to ensure that residents and visitors are safe. Police can do their jobs. Hosting the Super Bowl was our moment to shine. But imagine what this moment would have looked like under concealed carry reciprocity. It would be a recipe for chaos, making it too risky to host a large-scale national event like the Super Bowl.
I have no words, because their perimeter, their security perimeter was on point there, and there were no weapons allowed, and they were entitled to do that. Sure. It's a private event. There was nothing that said that people could carry there, but this idea that the fact that people might be carrying here lawfully is somehow a danger. I can't, for the life of me, figure out how those two lines intersect.
Look, Mike Freeman's not an idiot. John Choi's not an idiot. They know that line like that is pure bunk.
Oh yeah.
That if concealed carry reciprocity were in effect, the Super Bowl would have gone off completely exactly the same way that it did. Nothing would have changed, because you had massive amounts of heavily armed security out there ready for nearly any contingency.
And I'm willing to bet if you would have asked any of those security guys out there, are you more worried about a person carrying who has a permit or a person carrying who doesn't have a permit?
Right.
They'll say the doesn't have a permit. That's what they're looking for.
And that's what frustrates me about the tactics of the anti-gun crowd, is they engage in baseless fear-mongering using these straw men ridiculous hypotheticals that they know, they're smart enough to know, are complete and utter bunk.
Right.
And they do it just to scare people into getting on board with their agenda.
Yep.
Well, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing there are individuals like you and the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus who can go and provide the clarity on this stuff and speak to it with a level of passion. Because unfortunately, and that's what I wanted to drive home, is editorials like that, man, they will hit those individuals and they will scare people and they will buy into it. And unless there's people that can, with knowledge and facts and passion, go and refute that, it's really hard to go and counter when you have an individual like these attorneys that are putting out that kind of rhetoric.
Oh yeah, I appreciate that. So if anybody wants to help us in that endeavor, you can join us at gunowners.mn. We also have a member meeting coming up this weekend. I'll plug that. We have a governor's forum. We invited all the DFL candidates and the major Republican candidates and the major DFL candidates. Four of the Republican campaigns decided to join us. Matt Dean, of course, dropped out. But Jeff Johnson will be there, Mary Giuliani Stevens, and Keith Downey. None of the DFL candidates elected.
No, accepted your invitation.
None of them accepted. Some of them sent some nice notes back. Others just ignored me. But that is happening this Saturday in Moundsview.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the governor's race when it comes specifically to this issue. Can you hang on for a little bit longer? Let's take a call real quick. Eric from Ramsey, go ahead.
Hey, guys. A couple things. I think you're setting your goals a little too low with permits. If you just go back to the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. But the other thing is, you mentioned out-of-state non-holding states, where you didn't need a permit. I don't know the last time I saw an Idaho, New Hampshire, Arizona, or Wyoming plate in this county, on this state.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, make no mistake, we, part of our organization, is one of our main agenda items is to pass constitutional carry in Minnesota, so that you don't have to ask permission to carry in this state. So, when I talk about the permit system, I'm talking about, you know, doing what we can with what we've got, but if, yeah, one of our main agenda items is constitutional carry.
Rob Dorr, hang out for just a little bit longer. We're gonna take a quick break. We'll be back with more Justice and Drew right after this.
Justice and
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew, Brianne filling in for Sam on your Valentine's Day. So we decided that
very romantic edition of Justice and Drew today.
Yeah, yeah, you say it with beef or bullets. What we were.
Get your man some beef or bullets.
Beef or bullets. There
that's
you go.
Way to my heart.
That is the voice of Rob Dorr, who's going to hang out with us for a little bit longer here as we wrap up the show. We've been talking about this concealed carry reciprocity, ridiculous article, and also you mentioned that you're hosting a governor's forum.
Yep, a member meeting and governor's forum, so you can find out more information about that at gunowners.mn on our Facebook page. If you just search Gun Owners Caucus, then you will find us.
And when is that?
That is this Saturday in Moundsview. Starts at 9, ends at noon.
I have a few questions for you when it comes to the governor's race, but we have some people that have called in. Let's take your calls at 651-989-5855. Don from Burnsville. Good morning, Don.
Hey, Don.
Hi, good morning.
It's good to hear from you, Don. It's been a while.
Well, I was just wondering if it was okay in one state to drive a semi-truck without any special training, that you'd be okay then that a person could drive in any state without any special training, a semi-truck.
Well, it's required in each state to have a license for that semi truck. So,
it would sort of like be a gun. If you're going to have a gun, you have to have some training to safely use that gun.
Hey, so Don, if you have a commercial driver's license in Minnesota, are you allowed to drive that commercial vehicle in North Dakota?
It's like the driver's license, but not without training.
No.
That's how you get a commercial driver's license.
Yeah, but you have to have training. Don't you understand that?
Yes. Now, which constitutional amendment guarantees the right to drive?
I don't know that any does.
Yeah, that's right.
But we're talking about training. We're not talking about owning a gun. Or owning a truck. You can own the truck. You don't have to have special training to own a truck.
That's
or
right.
A gun.
That's right. You can own a semi truck and drive it on your own private property as much as you want without talking to the government. That's true. But again, there's a constitutional right to keep and bear, which means carry arms. Part of the Constitution allows you to drive?
I know what the law is, but I just think I'm making a pretty good point.
You're the only one.
I'm sure that you believe that.
I feel like I'm making a good point here, guys. Yeah. And nobody's acknowledging it.
I'm sure Don believes that.
Yeah, I didn't. Rob, when you walked in, you had all these microphones. I didn't understand why, and it was because you were going to be dropping many.
Just a bag full of mics this morning.
I'm making many great points.
The assumption behind the full faith and credit is that states will apply some reasonable standards to their licensing permits.
That's true. I think what Don's getting at is that some states don't require training and that they're allowed to carry. And the sky isn't falling there.
Yeah.
So I think that there would be a reasonable argument that if we found that states that don't have training are having murders at, you know, astronomical rates,
right. It
might be something we want to look at how to address. But that's not happening.
But the data isn't there.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, like trying to stop aliens from invading and passing laws about that. It's not happening, so you don't need to really address it.
Colin from Minneapolis. Good morning, Colin. Go ahead.
Morning. So I just have a comment and a question. Comment is, I'm not comfortable giving the federal government another open door to regulate the carrying of guns, and I think passing a new law for national carry reciprocity would do that. My question to follow that up is, in the light of the Supreme Court decision from a couple of years ago, why isn't this being attacked as a 14th Amendment issue?
We got thanks for calling, Colin. Actually, Kevin on Twitter made a similar point. He wrote, sorry, look what the Fed is doing with driver's licenses and real ID. If you think they won't try to do the same with the carry permit, you're not paying attention. You addressed this earlier that, you know, there is a concern and a fear that this is creating, you know, the dreaded federal database.
Yeah, if you look at the at where in statute or where in code that the bill is applying, they're very smart in the way that they wrote this, that it can't be amended. In order to establish some sort of federal standard, it would have to be a completely different section of law. And that can happen really at any time. I understand the concern. Right now, it's just full faith and credit. There is no federal standards. There's no federal oversight other than states have to recognize it. But I understand the concern. It's not there, and it could be, but it could be there at any time. So there's really, this doesn't open the door or allow anything that couldn't happen already.
Friend of the show, Chris on Twitter said, I think Justice and Drew actually pay hashtag Don from Burnsville to call in and troll the hashtag TCNT show. I wish we did, because I don't like knowing that guy's out there.
I feel a lot better.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a lot better. Just makes sense in my mind. I made a lot of good points in my mind.
I love that Don calls in. I love hearing him. But he's very indicative of that kind of emotional, I feel this, right, therefore right, that should be law. Yeah. And the fact is, I'm a very pragmatic person. I came to gun rights not because I'm a huge gun guy. I'm willing to bet that, you know, there's a lot more people in your audience that own a lot more and shoot a lot more than I do. I came to it because I saw a high amount of intellectual dishonesty, and I wanted to take a pragmatic view and a pragmatic look at it.
And then there's the whole fact that it is the Second Amendment of the Constitution.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah,
where I tend to fall. I'm not a gun guy at all. I'm not a recreational gun guy. I'm not a hunter. It's not my thing. It's never been my thing. But it's the Second Amendment of the Constitution.
It's in there.
Well, and that's what I love about, and we should repost it again, when Reason.com put up that amazing video talking about if you actually wanted to repeal it, this is what you would have to do. And it's a very honest look at what would have to take place in order for that to happen. And what I love about it is, if you watch that, you realize the facts and how that's never going to end up happening in the U.S., then hopefully you're a step further along in having that pragmatic conversation about the law and having real, honest, factual conversations and not just the emotional, like you said, it makes me feel weird and I don't like the feeling of somebody coming here from other places, got a gun and a train and trucks.
Yeah, you create this boogeyman of these other states that are just, you know, the Wild West when it comes to letting anybody have a gun and carry it around whenever they want. And it sounds kind of scary, but it's just not reality.
Now, what if guns were mounted on the truck?
Yeah. Well, and the bottom line is, the people who we are concerned about having guns are criminals. And there is not any state that allows a criminal to legally carry. So even a constitutional state, carry state, says that if you have a criminal record that prohibits you from owning a gun, you can't carry it. So the whole argument is moot when you go down to, are you scared of a law-abiding person having a gun and a holster on their hip? There is really no legitimate reason.
More of them around.
Yeah.
I'm more comfortable when I'm in a room with those people because I know that they are trained, I know that they respect the law, and I know that they are carrying the gun for the sole purposes of protecting themselves, their loved ones, and the people around them.
Yep.
And you want to talk about the emotional part of it. One of the last times that we had a lengthy conversation with you, Rob Dorr, and we spent a ton of time talking about on the show, was bump stocks.
Yeah.
And when was the last time that we mentioned bump stocks? Can anybody remember why we were talking about bump stocks? It was what happened in Vegas.
Yeah.
And the lengthy conversation that we had, and what happened with all that legislation that was being worked on when it came to all of that.
Oh, there's actually a bill coming up for this session.
Is there really?
Yeah, to ban bump stocks. So.
Here in Minnesota?
Yeah, I think Linda Slocum is authoring it.
So we are in an election year. We've got a governor's race. On the DFL side, they're pretty consistent on their state. You know, they're not very Second Amendment friendly, you would say.
Within the metro area, you will find a lot of pro-gun DFLers out in rural Minnesota.
Well, but of the major candidate.
Right. Oh, of the candidates,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
The one candidate that has a record of being friendly towards the Second Amendment is Tim Walz. But you've seen him, because now that he's actually running for governor and he needs that support from the Metro, he's completely flipped on a lot of these issues, hasn't he?
Yeah, he shot holes all in his in his Second Amendment history. He's been endorsed by the NRA. He's been endorsed by our political action committee, the Minnesota Gun Owners Political Action Committee. He's got a long history of supporting gun rights. When he saw that he needed the Metro to win the governor's race, he quickly abandoned that, started pushing for universal background checks, bump stock bans, bans on suppressors. Yeah, he's completely turned from his Second Amendment history, and he's received a lot of criticism from that, from the left. There's a lot of people, if you go out on Twitter, who are raking Tim over the coals for his Second Amendment, pro-Second Amendment history, but he's running from that as fast as he can in an effort to secure the DFL endorsement.
Is he getting called out for the blatant flip-flop on this issue because he's decided he wants to run for governor now?
Yeah, he is by the other DFL candidates. They're certainly doing it, and actually some of them are kind of going the other way. They're kind of pointing out that he has supported gun rights stuff in the past in order to make him less palatable to the DFL mainstream. Yeah. So it's really interesting, but it's clear that Tim is very much a politician. So he is going to put his finger up in the air, feel which way the wind is blowing, and follow that. So he's really has no commitment or passion for the Second Amendment.
He'll just say he's reformed.
He's evolved.
He's evolved. I'm sorry. Evolved is a much better word. You're right. Yeah,
I respect the Second Amendment, but whenever there's a but in there, you know that there's something not good coming.
I want to hear somebody say that about the First Amendment.
Yeah.
You know, I want to hear like somebody running for governor. I respect the First Amendment, but you know,
Justice and Drew.
Yeah. Gotta make sure people are responsible with this.
Yeah,
yeah. Put some common sense restrictions and regulations on the First Amendment. That'd be good. Aaron from Savage, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love the show as always.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I just think, you know, going back to the part of conversation that Don brought up with training and different states and so forth. I mean, doesn't this all ultimately fall back to there are already laws that would be taking care of anything that you could do bad or irresponsible with the gun? I mean, we already have plenty of laws on this, and if we just were consistent about enforcing those laws, not trying to add new layers of laws that make it more complex and more difficult for the average law-abiding gun owner to just peacefully have their right.
Right. No, yeah, it's a great point. You know, the movie The Post, talks about the First Amendment and prior restraint. So that's restricting somebody from doing something before they've actually done it. And and the left just went nuts over, look at this. This is what's happening in government today is all this interference. But they don't see it within their own side. You're absolutely right, Aaron, that the actions are what we need to be concerned about, not the mechanisms. I'm not concerned about somebody with a permit or somebody who's legally allowed to own a gun carrying a gun. I'm concerned about the guy who's got it in his waistband who's planning on doing something bad. And we can't stop the first guy because we're worried about the second guy.
Right. And I'd be just as worried about the guy with a knife in his waistband who wants to do something bad.
What's the, because I don't think we've gone there, but what's the biggest benefit for concealed carry reciprocity?
The biggest benefit is that if you're traveling, you don't have to try to get permits in every state. Right now, reciprocity is a quid pro quo, you scratch your back, I'll scratch mine, where, hey, if you recognize our citizens, we'll recognize yours, and all the states have to do is just come to that agreement. So we end up writing really confusing legislation. We have a whole patchwork of you can carry in this state. Like, okay, so if I want to drive to New Hampshire, which I do once or twice a year, I know I can carry in Wisconsin. I got to go pack it up in Illinois. Gotcha. I'm good again in Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania, and then I got to pack it up again in New York. Even though I'm not doing anything, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just driving. It fixes a lot of those issues.
Gotcha.
Colin, go ahead.
My follow-up question when I called earlier was, why not attack it as a 14th Amendment issue in light of the Supreme Court decision on gay marriage, as opposed to trying to enact another law which could always be repealed or rescinded by a future Congress and president.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah. I think that once we establish that it is a right in every state, then the states, if let's say Illinois goes and passes or California is probably more likely, says that, okay, we're banning concealed carry permanently, then it becomes an absolute 14th Amendment issue. We're more of a state-level organization, so not quite sure about what their strategy is for that, but I definitely sympathize with you with it being a 14th Amendment issue, and I could definitely see that being an easier argument once this bill's passed.
Rob Dorr, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure. I really, really appreciate your expertise and your knowledge on this subject.
On tomorrow's show, a couple of things we didn't get to today. We will get to, on Thursday's show, the changes that Trump wants to make to the food stamps program.
Yeah.
Food
people
pack.
Are freaking out about it.
Really freaking out about
it's
it.
Not that big a deal, guys.
I kind of like it. Yeah. I kind of dig it.
Right.
So we'll get into what he is suggesting. Also, the list of 36 people, which has grown, Drew, because I've added some of my own, 36 people who could challenge Trump in 2020 out of the Hill.
Yeah, the Hill is so desperate.
Yeah.
If they've come up with 36
it's
names.
Nobody
else has come up with 36 names.
It's like all Democrats. It's just like, you know, anybody.
Is Amy Klobuchar on that list?
Yes.
Yes. Of course she is. She's on every list.
So is Woody Woodpecker. Okay, I may have added him.
Is that John's list? Okay.
Is the Rock on that list?
Yes, he is. So is the Big Unit.
Should be a lot of fun. Join us tomorrow. Have a great Valentine's Day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. I don't give me integration, give me true communication. I don't give me sorrow, I won't be. I'm Chris Addison. Here's